This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
The world's fate seems to hang in the balance over tweets. Chris Graham here on Street Knowledge, and we got to talk about the sword of Damocles literally hanging over our heads right now, as it seems that President Trump is pushing brinksmanship on Kim Jong-un. Forget how to pronounce the name there, and it doesn't really matter. Kim, let's say, the leader of North Korea, who has been touting his nation's capabilities and the propaganda machine that he has in his stead, touting the capabilities that North Korea has to deliver nuclear-tipped missiles, at least as far as a U.S. military base in the Pacific in Guam. You've heard about a lot about this here in recent days. And at least theoretically, distance-wise, these missiles might be able to reach different locations in the United States. Whether or not we believe the propaganda arms of North Korea, a country that's closed off almost entirely to the rest of the world, by design of ours and design of theirs, that kind of thing, it's out there, right? It's out there that at least North Korea is claiming this capability, and President Trump is responding in kind. I guess he's using the old fight fire with fire approach. And we've heard about the tweets, the statements, not just tweets, but statements from the president, promising fire and fury, promising an unholy hell, essentially, to rain down upon North Korea if North Korea were to use its missile technology in real-life situations. So where do we go here? And I want to give the president some credit examining this foreign policy approach, just because I think that there's at least a debate that needs to be had as to whether or not you need to provoke a tyrant is one thing. But the president argues, and his small circle argues, that he inherited a mess from his predecessor. He's blaming entirely everything on Barack Obama, which is ridiculous. We have a history with North Korea dating back to the Korean War in the early 1950s. Technically, that war is still ongoing. Basically a ceasefire into that war if you watched MASH, right? If you're not of the generation maybe that fought in that war, you certainly grew up in the next generation that saw the TV show about that war. So we know a ceasefire ended that war, and the ceasefire is still in place. No resolution, unlike, for example, with Vietnam, largely a peaceful existence now between the United States, the West, and Vietnam, the communist forces that many Western powers fought for over a quarter century. This has been ongoing for more than half a century now. We're 60-plus years into the conflict with North Korea. And the approach of the U.S. and the West to North Korea has been to isolate. Isolate diplomatically, isolate economically particularly. And then also for the United States at least, we have, I think it's 23,000 troops in South Korea. They share a border on that peninsula of Asia, so we have a strong military presence still in South Korea, and then, of course, our presence in other parts of the Asian sphere, Japan, and then Guam. So that's the two-pronged approach, and it has been for a long, long time. It's military, and it's diplomatic. And the diplomatic isn't oriented towards anything other than trying to bring the North Korea regime to its knees and basically get them to open up through that kind of pressure. It's a similar approach, not quite as militaristic as we took with Cuba. We did our best to isolate Cuba diplomatically for a long, long period of time. Now President Trump is trying to undo some advancements in that policy from his predecessor, Barack Obama. But getting back to Korea, the argument from the Trump team is that this policy of show of military strength on borders, so to speak, and this diplomatic and economic isolation hasn't worked. That's the argument from President Trump. And he hasn't said this, but the reason he would say, I assume, that it's not working is because North Korea is now claiming the ability to put nuclear weapons of some sort, whether they're powerful at all or just symbolic, onto missiles. And recent missile launches indicate that North Korea does have the ability to project missiles outside of its sphere. How far is the question? And so President Trump is saying that the solution is not to continue to simply isolate and project military strength on the borders and play that game. It's to brinksmanship it. You know, this is the Cuban Missile Crisis playing out 55 years later in one sense. One key difference being that Cuba is 90 miles off our borders and North Korea is literally halfway across the world. The United States is far less at risk from any action regarding North Korea. Guam, of course, obviously, with Kim Jong-il's propaganda machine talking about Guam, they would be in the crosshairs. But really anyone, South Korea clearly has to be on high alert. You know, you talk about the capital of South Korea, Seoul, being 35 miles from the North Korean border. You talk about Japan being just outside of, you know, they have a sea that separates them, but essentially, you know, very close to the border. And China has to worry as well. Now, China is the wild card here, or is the complicating factor, maybe. I don't say wild card because China has very consistently supported North Korea. 90% of North Korean trade is with China. And obviously, China makes a lot of money, or makes some money. I wouldn't say a lot of money. It's a country of more than a billion people. But you have to assume that a good portion of its GDP comes from its trade relationship with North Korea. And actually, honestly, China has stakes in this game, too. The Chinese have used, dating back to the days when China was inimical to the West, has used North Korea as a buffer, you know, to the Western powers, United States specifically, I suppose, but also NATO powers, Western European powers. It's used it as a pawn in the game, a bargaining chip, if you want to say, whether explicitly or implicitly. And that continues today. We get word out of China that you know, the saber rattling currently being done by President Trump is not really supported by the Chinese. Essentially, the message being sent is that any provocation by the United States in the form of a preemptive strike would be met with resistance by the Chinese, and that's where the bigger fear should lie, not with North Korea crazily shooting off a missile or two, because literally how much can this country with an economy the size of Vermont's produce in terms of nuclear and missile firepower that could really bring the rest of the world to its knees? The threat to the world isn't North Korea. The threat to the world is response to North Korea. What happens when, say, let's, you know, Kim Jong-il wants to do something to provoke an attack, because at this stage, for 60 plus years, his regime, the regime of his father, regime of his grandfather, has been behind the eight ball internationally, has one ally left in the world that is only a lukewarm ally at best. And so, you know, for him to start something that could perhaps make China a more supportive partner, perhaps with the tensions that the United States has with Russia right now, we would have to predict where Russia would come down on a theoretical preemptive strike by the United States. You know, Kim could push a button and start a chain of events that could lead to a reworking of the new world, of the world order, if you want to say, the world order that's persisted since the end of World War II, and since the end of the Cold War, certainly, you know, since the end of the Cold War, I mean, you know, the United States and Russia have largely, if not been allies, they've at least been frenemies, and we'd have to question that. I think the United States and China have at you know, have been competitive frenemies. economically competing, not necessarily militarily competing. And it's always left in the background, though, that, hey, you know, China could say, if you want to start trouble, we're willing to step up if we have to. So that's what's at stake here. And I think you can tell with my analysis kind of where I'm going to go with my recommendations for action. I really this is where I think the danger lies in President Trump's provocations. At this stage, he is essentially daring a despotic ruler, a megalomaniac, who has access to, even if it's just the equivalent of a couple of rubber bands with spitballs, there's still enough that if he uses those rubber bands with spitballs, he can start World War III if we respond. And at this stage, if President Trump doesn't respond to even a symbolic missile strike against, say, Guam or some other unknown target perhaps in the Pacific, even if no nuclear action is initiated there by North Korea, say either the bomb is a dud or they don't even have a bomb on their missile. If President Trump doesn't respond with a full fire and fury, as he said this week, then he loses face. So he's got to respond in some way, right? And if he responds in some way, I think it's predictable that China's going to respond in some way, and we don't know what Russia's going to do, and so that's where we are. The president is I think he thinks he's playing 4D chess, as one of his advisors tried to say a few months ago, and I think what he's done is he's playing a game of checkers here to stage. He's gonna do a jump here, and he's gonna get jumped a couple times himself. And what that means is, you know, we're putting ourselves at far greater risk than we need to. And now, that's not to say that we need to take the actions of North Korea, which are themselves provocative, in the sense that when North Korea is testing missiles and they're showing at least capability to project into the Pacific Ocean, that we should take that lightly. And, you know, to say that just continuing the same vein is going to work in this particular instance, you know, I guess what I would suggest is, you know, the president says that these policies haven't worked. We haven't had direct hostilities with North Korea in over 60 years. So you can say something hasn't worked, and then you look at that, and that's pretty much a fact that it has worked. Now, what solutions could there be at this stage? You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. You can't take back tweets. Well, I guess you can delete them, but they're still out there. Somebody screenshotted them. You at this stage, President Trump can't back down and say, okay, here's what I really meant. He's become well known in his short tenure at the hierarchy of American politics for saying one thing and not meaning it, and not necessarily even meaning a third thing. He promised, for example, this, you know, progress towards a wall with Mexico. That is not going to happen. I don't even want to use the repeal and replace Obamacare in this example, because that's the obvious failure. But you can't simply, using the wall as an example, you can't say, okay, well, what I really meant was, because this is what some of his team around him have tried to intimate, that with the wall, he didn't really mean that he would build a wall and then Mexico would pay for it. What he really meant was, we would beef up security along the border, and we would impose some sort of tariff on Mexico so that effectively they'd pay for it. Of course, and what that meant would be starting a trade war with Mexico and potentially with the rest of the Western Hemisphere. And so they've backed off that, and we have no money for even the beefed up security forces he talked about. He found out that that was a lot harder than he thought it was on the campaign trail. And I think he's going to find out that North Korea is a lot harder than just simply flexing your muscle, such as President Trump himself figuratively or literally has muscle, and cowing them into submission. This is a regime that has persisted for more than 60 years with nothing. I mean, this is a small military regime that has literally starved millions of its own countrymen and women to be able to put as much of its tiny GDP into military development so that it can at least have something to hold over its enemies, its perceived enemies. And again, the Kim regime and regimes previous could have followed the model of Vietnam. Being enemies of the West doesn't have to be in perpetuity, right? I mean, the Vietnamese have shown that, heck, the thawing of relations with China over the past 45 years has shown that the competing visions for the development of society, communist, socialist versus capitalistic, democratic, can coexist. And they can actually have educational, academic, economic, cultural relationships that are meaningful for both sides. North Korea is alone, essentially, at this stage in world history, in deciding to be aligned against literally the rest of the world, save one sort of half-decent friend in China. And so to say that you can threaten these people into submission, they have existed for 6+ decades under the worst of circumstances. They didn't fight this fight that they forced upon themselves to simply give in to President Trump. That's what the threats fail to recognize. The threats fail to recognize that Kim simply wants something. That's it. He wants something. Just like everybody else, all of us in the world, we want something. For most of us individually, we want a house. We wouldn't mind a car. Some of us like kids. Others of us like dogs. We want to have some fun on the weekend, right? Countries want things as well. Countries want security from outside invasion. They want protection internally. You know, people want to be safe in their homes. They want education for their children so that they can make a living for themselves. The economy, countries want economies that can provide for all this. And I would argue that that's what North Korea wants. Now, you know, yeah, the Kim regime is going about it in a very odd way, but they've been under the thumb of economic sanctions, cultural sanctions, academic sanctions, sanctions for 60+ years. And at this stage, the development of missile technology, the potential development of nuclear technology to go along with it, is simply a means of it's obviously a bullying means from a small bully, but it's a means to say, we think we are big enough to be sitting at the table, and here's what we want. And likely what they want, simply, is the ability to trade again, to have economic relations again that enable their people to eventually do a little better than starvation, which is what seems to be the case from the few reports to get out of North Korea. Now, that's not to say that, yes, obviously, if you're sitting here advising the Kim regime, you say, there are better ways to go about that than what you're doing right now, basically threatening nuclear war. But they've backed themselves into this corner for 60+ years. Now our president has backed us into an interesting corner, and all we're doing now is waiting to see who blinks. And it's hard to think that our president's words, his tweets, his actions have made it so that now the fate of what we know to be the world right now hinges upon whether or not Kim decides to push a button and shoot a missile at somebody. Because then once that happens, we have to respond. And once we respond, China has to respond. Once China responds, I think you can assume. I know China will respond. You have to assume Russia responds. I don't know which way they respond. I doubt they respond in a way that we're pleased with. That's where we are right now, and that's why things are scary right now. Not, you know, the media discussion is simply about his tweets and his rhetoric. That's all well and good. The danger isn't his tweets and his rhetoric. The danger is the corner that we're in and that we have put ourselves in. I think we all want to believe that this ends well. I hope it does. My gut tells me that this isn't going to end. This isn't going to end in a way that doesn't disrupt what we know the world to be right now. So, with that gloom and doom, leading you into a weekend, I record this on Friday. I usually do a weekender where I promote what's going up on the weekend. I don't know that I need to do that. There's a big Mega Millions. Go out and win the lottery. Good luck with that. Maybe you can spend some of it before the world comes to an end. I don't know. I don't want to be that gloomy and doomy, but you know, I have thought this through a little bit. Go play the lottery. Go visit your favorite craft beer or cidery or winery. Have some fun this weekend. Let's hope this all blows over. Hopefully what blows over isn't nuclear winter. Well, there we go. That's another edition of Street Knowledge. I want to thank you for listening, and we hope to be able to talk again next week.